Join us for the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society's annual conference. It's happening October 24th through the 26th in New York City. This year's theme, Rethinking Paradigms, Innovative Approaches for Optimal Wellness. And it's not just for healthcare professionals. Teachers, parents, and curious minds are invited too. We've got a phenomenal lineup of keynote speakers. Dr. Thomas Campbell, physician and co-author of The China Study, bringing insights on nutrition and lifestyle medicine. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, trauma expert and author of The Body Keeps the Score, who practically rewrote how we think about trauma. I'll be chatting with some of this year's speakers in upcoming episodes of Healthy Brain, Happy Body, so stay tuned to get a sneak peek and maybe even a little inspired. Find the registration link in the show notes. It's 3 days of inspiration, insight, and community you won't want to miss. Here's what Angelica Sadar, executive director of NRBS, is looking forward to.
The value is outstanding. We've priced it well. There's going to be early bird rates. If you're affiliated with the schools, there are really special rates. And if you're a member of NRBS, there's special rates. And we even have special rates for members of other professional societies such as ISNR and AAPB. The value is just going to be outstanding.
So join us in New York City, October 24th through the 26th. Find the registration link in the show notes or at nrbs.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Our guide today is Dr. Cynthia Kersen, who is presenting at this year's NRBS conference. Dr. Kersen is a leading expert in neurofeedback and quantitative EEG and a professor at Saybrook University. She's a co-investigator on the NIMH-funded International Collaborative ADHD Neurofeedback Study and the founder and director of education for Applied Psychophysiology Education. She also is a long-standing advocate for the evidence-based health benefits of exercise in nature, which is the topic of her talk at the upcoming conference.
Listeners, we're here talking with some of the people who are going to be joining us for the NRBS conference in New York City, October 24th to the 26th. Today, we are joined by Cynthia Kersen. Cynthia, welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Hi, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Now, your talk during the conference is going to bring together topics like exercise, nature, and neuroscience. And I'm curious what kind of brought you to the intersection of those topics.
Well, I am a firm believer in exercise. Certainly the older I get, the more I can appreciate the importance of cardiovascular health, gut health, and obviously brain health. And I have always been kind of an outdoors person. I'm a master gardener. So I have a 2.5 acre property that has vineyards and orchards and vegetable gardens and pollinator gardens. And I know how important it is for me to step out of my office and appreciate and reset, just if it's just simply walking around my property.
Most people probably know you best from your work and writings on neurofeedback and psychophysiology. So how does the research on exercise and green space kind of complement the brain-based work?
Well, the important thing is to recognize that nature and exercise, and they're not always the same, for one thing. There are different influences, going out and running and having a podcast going on in your ears, and that's not the same thing as being with nature. Okay, so we can talk about that a little bit. But I've learned a lot about what happens in the brain when one exercises and or when one is at one with nature. To start off with, we spend way more time indoors than we did evolutionarily, right? We lived outdoors. We foraged, we hunted. The only time we went inside was to protect ourselves from weather or some other danger or to sleep. So we were always outside, and now we're always inside. And that is affecting our physiology and our brains in ways that we need to bring that balance back.
Would you talk more about the neural systems, the physiology that is affected by this? I think that'd be really interesting to our listeners.
Yeah. So from an exercise perspective, you are exercising your cardiovascular system. So you're kind of cleaning it out, right? In the brain, we have these chemicals that are called neurotrophic factors. You know, just when you thought you knew everything about every neurotransmitter and every Brodmann area and every, you know, substructure of the brain, another thing pops out. So these neurotrophic factors are factors that influence the mechanisms within the brain, and they're very closely tied to hormones. And so the one that I mostly spend my time thinking about and talking about is what's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF. Okay, it kind of sounds like a bank commercial, but so BDNF is most of the BDNF in our brains is produced and used in the hippocampus. So for those of us who might not be familiar with what the hippocampi really are, they are the centers for memory and learning in the brain. And there's one on each side. They're kind of, you know, connected to the interiors of the temporal lobes. So they're kind of right there, just right on the inside of the cortex. And when we exercise, we stimulate the production of BDNF, which makes the processes of the hippocampi much more efficient and functional.
So it actually helps with learning.
Absolutely helps with learning. So when I first put this presentation together, I was still in practice. I'm not in practice anymore. And it encouraged me to have the kids that came in with learning disabilities, ADHD, to run around. You know, my office was right by a path that was along the bay. And I would encourage them and their parents and maybe their siblings, whoever was bringing them, to just go for a quick walk or a run or some, you know, just to kind of burn off some steam, but also to stimulate the BDNF so that when they sat down in the chair to do neurofeedback, I felt that they had an edge, right? I mean, this is anecdotal. I don't have, you know, I haven't done the research, but others have done the research and have shown that there has been marked changes in how the brain learns after exercise.
So what then is the difference between being with nature and exercising?
So again, if you're running, even if you're in a park and you're running with your, you're listening to music, you have your podcast on or whatever, that's not being in nature. That's exercising. So yes, that is valuable and very important to brain health. But being in nature brings us back to the way that our body functioned when we spent so much more time in nature. And so, you know, it's the body is connecting the body is connecting to nature and is connecting in a way that it is very familiar. So when we're in an environment where we've got in lights, you know, artificial lights, and we've got, you know, the computer screens coming at us, and even if we're inside with, you know, lights and whatever, our bodies have to work at homeostasis in that environment. But when we're in nature, our bodies don't have to work at it. Our bodies feel very, very comfortable in nature. It's what our bodies know. You know, evolutionarily, we, for the last 200 years, we spend a lot more time indoors. We don't exercise, we don't walk, we don't connect with nature in the way that we used to. But, you know, prior to 200 years ago, the industrial age, you know, whatever, we were always connected with nature. I mean, that's how we live. And so it just is way more, you know, pun intended, I guess, natural for the body to be in nature than it is to be indoors.
So being out in nature may help engender homeostasis.
Yeah.
How does that show? Like, how would I know, or how would I see it in someone else that was occurring?
Well, you know, there's a lot of, so you're sitting at your desk and there's lots of studies, and I'm happy to pop up a few of them that actually show that cortisol levels are reduced when one spends time in nature. That brain function, doing continuous performance tasks and memory tasks and things like that, that the people who were asked to take a walk in nature, as opposed to the people who were sitting in a room watching a video of nature, as opposed to people sitting in a room watching something that isn't really tied to nature, that there was a lower level of improvement in cognitive, you know, task, and then a middle level, even watching nature is still the body still responds to it, and then being in nature, of course, showed the most improvement in the cognitive tasks.
I just think it's so interesting and important, just by changing our context, our literal environment, you can see these changes, these physiologic changes, which are expressed in performance of, and how, I guess, mood, I would imagine mood and memory and all those things we're trying to improve. So given that there seems to be sort of a evolutionary connection to this, and humankind has sort of evolved across lots of different natural environments, do some environments seem to do this better than others, or is it just kind of any nature? What thoughts do you have about that?
Yeah, there was a study that was done that, and they came up with this. They call it the 23-5 method. And so the 23-5 method is to go for a walk in a park, in a place where there's lots of trees, wherever. To go for a walk for 20 minutes, three times a week, 3 days a year. No, I'm sorry, 3 days a month to spend more time, like camping, but just spending a lot more time outdoors. And then the five is 5 days a year where you are completely immersed in nature, whether it be backpacking, which is different than car camping, right? You're like, you are in nature. You're very small compared to nature, right? You're a bit, you realize, how almost unimportant you are compared to the dynamics of nature, right? So that's the 23-5 method. And so those are all very different experiences, right? I mean, obviously the easiest one is to get off our desks and go for a walk for 20 minutes at least 3 times a week. And also studies have shown that people who walk in an urban area, their cortisol levels and what have you aren't improved in the way that if you're walking in nature. It's a vacation, right? I mean, we all think of nature as a place to vacation. Even if we're going to a beach resort, we're going to nature, right? We don't take vacation in an office building, right? We're pretty much constantly tied to that whole idea of recreating, right? Recreation is the term recreate, right? And most of us think of recreation as doing something that is outdoors.
So exercise per se has some impact, but say walking on a treadmill versus walking in the forest would be different. The forest obviously would be more beneficial.
Exactly. And there's a lot to be said for getting exercise. Don't throw out your treadmill, because sometimes that's what you have. And studies have shown that you get more benefit when you're exercising your lower limbs than when you're exercising your upper limbs. So walking and running is a better form of exercise for cardiovascular health and brain health. So yeah, don't give up your treadmill.
Well, I was also going to ask about people who might not have easy access to nature. Obviously, exercise can help, but are there other things they can do to get some of that benefit, even if they are not able to spend so much time?
I mean, their option is to watch nature shows. You know, I mean, really, if they're non-ambulatory, and they're restricted to, you know, a room, you know, then that would really be the best way for them to get some good out of nature.
So you can observe it, get some benefit, even if you're not interacting with it to that level.
Yeah, because again, it's like a vacation. Your whole body just relaxes when you're in, you know, that space.
A lot of what you're talking about does remind me of what we're trying to get from things like mindful meditation. How would you differentiate the two, sort of mindful meditation versus being in nature?
Well, think about it. When we're doing any kind of mindful meditation where there's sounds involved, we're not hearing, you know, car honking. We're not hearing trains go by. You know, we're not hearing elevators. We're hearing sound of music, sound of water. We hear the sound. We hear rain. We hear waves. We hear trickling water. Wind, birds. You know, we are tied to that kind of influence on our psyche, really.
That also, I mean, that makes me think, one of the questions I wanted to ask was about how do we integrate that into our work? But you're suggesting we can even use recorded sounds of nature, recorded visuals of nature to integrate it. Are there other ways? I mean, I know there's sort of nature therapies and things like that. How else might we, how might the sort of average clinician use this?
Well, you know, and I will say this, and I've said it many times, it's like when you're on an airplane and the flight attendant says, if your mask comes down, take care of yourself first and then take care of the people around you who need your help, right? So the best thing you could do is take care of yourself in that way, is to get exercise and get out in nature and take the time, you know, have that be part of you.
And that can help us figure out how to bring it into our work.
Yeah.
And just experience the benefits ourselves.
Right, right. Put a treadmill or a bicycle, you know, a stationary bicycle in your waiting room. And if you work a lot with kids, get them to get that BDNF, you know, flowing.
No, I love the thought of having one of those in my waiting room. So obviously you've been very involved for years in neurofeedback. And you've talked a little bit here about how nature, how exercise may impact neurofeedback training. Could you talk a little bit, maybe expand on that a bit? I don't know if there's any research on that even, but just what are your own thoughts or experiences about that?
No, there isn't any research on that. But, you know, right now we're playing a lot with stimulation technologies, photobiomodulation, RTMS, AVE. And some of the work that's being done, we're looking at utilizing those as kind of brain balancers, if you will, or to kind of erase the brain so that when they do something, a learning thing like neurofeedback, biofeedback, you know, neuromuscular reeducation, any kind of learning thing, that precursor of doing the neurostimulation improves the learning, right? Let's, you know, bundle exercise and nature in that, you know, we could do a head to head. We can do RTMS compared to a 20-minute walk, but it would be great. It would be great to, you know, lots of studies have been done that show that nature is very, very powerful in terms of reducing stress levels, and mostly cortisol is being, you know, tested before and after and whatever. But, you know, an EEG before and after, you know, an EEG before you go on that 5-day, you know, hiking, you know, backpacking trip or something like that. You know, we're going to see, or testing for chemicals, you know, hormones, you know, all that kind of stuff, because there's plenty of subjective research. But of course, we know in our field that we need to tie the subjective with the objective in order to really support that what we're doing is so beneficial to the organism.
Are you finding that the clinicians you've taught or working with, are they more open to this sort of thing? Because I can imagine 10 years ago, we wouldn't have even thought about this, really.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about whether you're seeing any change in our socialization.
Well, you know, whenever I've spoken about this, people always at the end, people say, I am so inspired now. I'm going to work out tomorrow morning or whatever. You're right. I need to get out and do that, you know. So whether they do it or not, I don't know, but it is inspiring. And I think, you know, when we do this talk in New York, I think that there will also be parents in the audience, right? Because of that, on the day that I'm doing it, we're bringing in, you know, people that are outside of the field. And this is just as important for parents to understand this as it is for clinicians to understand it. It's probably more important, because if they did what they needed to do with their kids, maybe they wouldn't need to be in our clinics.
Then what would we do with our time?
Go out in nature.
And actually, it'll be really interesting to give this talk in New York City, where, of course, it's such an urban area. Obviously, there's park in the area, but I don't know how easily accessible it is to the population.
Actually, New York City has a fair amount of parks for a big metropolitan city. I have not run across a lot of parks in Hong Kong, but there are a lot of parks in Seoul, South Korea. And I feel different in those two places. I feel better. I enjoy Seoul, South Korea more than I enjoy Hong Kong. And I attribute some of that to the fact that I actually go from my hotel to my classroom in Seoul through a park. I walk through a park. And the conference, the convention center is right on the other side of the park in my hotel. And they always say, why don't you stay here? It's closer. I'm like, no, I want to walk through the park. It's a beautiful park.
Well, obviously this is very important to you personally. Would you be okay just telling us a little bit about your story and how nature has become so important to you and maybe the ways you believe it's really helped you?
Well, you know, being a master gardener, okay, I became a master gardener 5 years ago. You know, I don't know if you know what that is, or maybe your listeners may not know, but many counties in the United States have master gardener programs. And ours, because I'm up in Northern California, is tied to UC Davis, which is a big agricultural, viticultural university and also medical. And so we get certified through them. We have to take courses, you know, we have to pass the test, basically, that you know enough about working with the community and enough about horticulture to be able to, you know, share what you know. There's just such a sense of worth to me to to learn, to know what I know, and to have access to, you know, groundbreaking research, because we are tied to UC Davis. And just, you know, I live on 2.5 acres, and, you know, my next neighbor is a quarter of a mile away. And, you know, I don't think I could live any closer to another human. You know, I mean, you get to the point where I need this. It's not like I am so lucky and isn't this fun. I need this. I know it. I mean, I just, like, my door is open. I love being in nature. I don't know. I know I'm not answering that question very thoughtfully, I don't think, but when I'm not sitting at my desk, I'm doing something in one of my gardens.
I actually think you're giving a great answer, because it just seems like it's just foundational to you living your life. You've talked about some of the questions we may have and answered through research. If you could sort of choose the direction, the next research direction in this area, what should we study?
Well, I'd like to look at, like I said, most of the studies that are looking at the reduction of stress, or perceived stress, if you will, but actually not perceived, because they're seeing that when you spend more time in nature, your cortisol levels go down, which is an indication of, you know, lower physiological and psychological arousal, right? I'd love to see more studies be done with the EEG and also with cardiovascular. You know, I'd love to see, you know, heart health be studied in the same. The cortisol is just so easy to study. You know, it's just, oh yeah, your cortisol levels went down, boom, you're less stressed. You know, but there's so much more individuality to, you know, heart rate variability and the EEG that you'd need a lot of subjects. It can get quite extensive and very hard to do, but that's what I would love to see and love to be involved in.
And based on your experience, on what you know, what is one sort of simple change a person could make that would kind of bring them closer to the benefits of nature? What's one thing you would advise people to do?
Get off your butt. I mean, 100%. Don't, you know, if it's 10 minutes, you know, I mean, I can walk around my property in 10 minutes and sit back down and be ready for my next meeting. And it just changes everything. It's a game changer. It just, rather than sitting here looking at emails and, you know, and it's just, I need to reset. And I think everyone should recognize that as an absolute necessity for their well-being.
And of course, that's anything anybody could do: clinicians, parents, real people, regular people, yeah. Kids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's free.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much for sharing some of your ideas, and we're looking forward to your full talk in October. And listeners, we will of course have links to register for the talk, so join us in New York City. And again, Cynthia, thank you so much for coming on to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to New York as well.
You are listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Dr. Cynthia Kirsten, expert in psychophysiology and integrating nature and exercise into healthcare. Come to her talk as part of this year's NRBS conference in New York City from October 24th to the 26th. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the Subscribe Here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us get to more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neural feedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us for our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.